Hello and welcome to episode 19 of Investigating the Post Office Scandal. My name is Rebecca Thompson and I wrote the first investigation into the Post Office on this matter for Computer Weekly in 2009.
My name is Nick Wallace. Hello, I am the author of the book, The Great Post Office Scandal.
This podcast has spent the last few weeks focusing on phase two of the Post Office Horizon IT inquiry, which is taking place at the moment in central London. We've heard opening statements from the Post Office and Fujitsu, which designed, built, rolled out and operated the Post Office's disastrous Horizon IT system. We also heard from the government and lawyers representing hundreds of sub-postmasters.
We've listened to senior project managers at the Post Office and Fujitsu on how the project came together, why such a bug-ridden system was foisted on sub-postmasters, and started asking how data records from this bug-ridden system was then used as a basis on which to prosecute sub-postmasters, erroneously, as it turned out, for theft.
This week, the inquiry focused on corporate knowledge. So we heard from another senior exec at Fujitsu, Mike Coombs, the former MD of the Post Office, Stuart Sweetman, and a senior Post Office technical specialist called Jeremy Folks. Also giving evidence was a very impressive techie from the accounting firm Grant Thornton, who was brought into the Post Office from 1998 to the point Horizon was rolled out in 1999 and 2000. And finally, we heard from a long-serving Post Office company secretary called Jonathan Evans.
A quick reminder before we start, this is some technical terms for you. The Horizon EPOS and branch accounting system, before it was rolled out, was known as Pathway or the Pathway Project. And ICL was the company which was 80% owned by Fujitsu and eventually was rebranded as Fujitsu. And it was ICL Fujitsu who owned the Pathway Project and operated it on behalf of the Post Office.
And what does EPOS mean?
Oh, yes. EPOS stands for electronic point of sale. So that's the electronic till, which you will see sitting on post office counters even today, a newer version of it. And that EPOS system also compiled the weekly branch accounts inside a post office for sub-postmasters. And this was a highly unstable piece of software back in the late 90s, early 2000s, as we know. And all of the witnesses mentioned this EPOS system a number of times this week. So, all right, Rebecca, let's turn to the witnesses. Who stood out for you the most?
So I found Jeremy Folks to be really interesting because it felt like he was closer to the action than a lot of the very senior witnesses that we've heard from so far, which meant that he was both particularly alive to the problems with the design and rollout of Horizon. And because he also hadn't been responsible for decision making, he was perhaps a bit freer to criticise. He was responsible for assurance, so it was his job to work with ICL to understand how they were meeting the post office's requirements and make sure that the system worked. He talked at length about the fact that ICL was difficult to work with and wouldn't share information, and he called it playing the PFI card because the PFI contract meant that ICL wasn't required to share stuff contractually.
Yeah, and you got the sense that he was really quite frustrated by the lack of oversight that someone who knew all about the technical requirements that a Horizon or system like Horizon would need, that simply the Post Office were not able to look into the code that that ICL were writing and find out whether or not it was going to be fit for purpose. And Folks said that after the benefits agency left the Horizon project in 1999, there was an opportunity to try and get more daylight on what ICL Fujitsu were up to when it came to the renegotiation of the contract to sort of essentially get rid of the benefits agency's requirements. But that opportunity was missed in the rush to get Horizon up and running. And Folks said this meant the Post Office failed to notice that in late 1999, Fujitsu considered the EPOS side of Horizon so unstable it might need to be rewritten.
I don't think I can say that they wanted to steamroll through. There was certainly a strong desire, I'd go as far as maybe saying sort of gun to the head, to get the new contract. The contract had to be signed by a particular date. And from what we know, we've read elsewhere, there was pressure from not just the Post Office, but from up into government to get the contract with Fujitsu signed. Therefore, it is just a guess, is that the idea of reopening a can of worms and going back to Pathway and saying, yeah, we'll sign a new contract with you, but we want this, 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 and this, in particular, if they knew that getting this, this, this and this would immediately result in us having access to the kind of documentation that was revealed to me a couple of days ago, which would have made the whole thing explode, was not anybody's... What was going to happen at that point? We were unaware at that point that during the latter part of... the middle to latter part of 1999, that within Pathway they were considering whether EPOS at that point should be rewritten. You know, if we'd at that point been told, oh, well, you sign a new contract with the post office, but, by the way, one of the main components you're taking on, we might think, you know, it's so bad, we think we might want to rewrite it. You know what I mean?
Jeremy Folks there, who also talked about not receiving the support from senior management at the post office that he felt he needed to do his job correctly and not really feeling very listened to. Here's him being questioned by... Here he is being questioned by one of the barristers representing sub-postmasters, Chris Jacobs.
You raised these issues with other people internally. Do you feel that you were listened to?
In hindsight, I guess the answer has to be not enough. We did raise these issues, and you know they're documented over an extended period of time. It was maybe, you know, the technical side was that we were raising was maybe only one view going in. There were others involved in testing, there were others involved in contract, others involved in everything else. Certainly, it would appear that it didn't get adequate visibility or adequate attention.
And did you think about raising the issue maybe in a public forum, given the concerns that you've identified?
No, because in 1999, 2000, I think the appropriate route was, we raise these concerns all the way through up the management chain.
That was Jeremy Folks. Another thing that he said really hammered home the big question for the inquiry.
What I don't understand is how magically this went from a system which was getting out there, things were being fixed, but, you know, maybe shaky, to anybody thinking it was in the right state to go around prosecuting without doing the correct investigations in the middle.
And when pressed on this, he said that he suspected there had been a culture that was predisposed towards not believing the postmasters.
My only way of answering the question is that there were people within the investigation and prosecution side in POCL who, I think it's called confirmation bias. You know, they were convinced that sub-postmasters were misbehaving. And then if the system came up and showed that somebody was 14,000 down, rather than taking into account, you know, is the system right or is there some mistake, it gave them what they wanted.
Jeremy Folks. OK, let's have a look at Stuart Sweetman's evidence. Now, he was the managing director of the post office, obviously very focused on rolling out Horizon in 1999. He was the actual project sponsor, so basically he would be for the high jump if it didn't happen. And he described... during his evidence, that 1999 was one of the most fraught periods of his management career. When he was asked about the fact that even by mid-1999, Horizon's accounting integrity was so unstable that the post office's auditors, Ernst & Young, were going to make a qualification to the company accounts, he acknowledged the scale of the job on his hands.
There were data integrity problems, and they needed to be fixed. And if we didn't fix them by the year end, Ernst & Young would have qualified the accounts. They were fixed to the extent material to a true and fair view of the accounts. Whether they were fixed sufficiently to overcome the problems, if you were at the other end of the telescope as a sub-postmaster, where you had a £500 problem, that £500 problem doesn't threaten the true and fair view of the post office accounts, but I recognise is very significant when it comes to being a sub-postmaster. In these discussions, we were primarily looking at the big picture, the post office as a whole. That's not to say the Horizon programme wasn't looking at the interests of sub-postmasters, but in this sort of discussion, it was the big picture looking forward and with the materiality of the corporation. So it's how you read something. It's different from where you sit. If you're on the main board, you're looking at big issues. If you're a sub-postmaster, you're looking at your cash. And those are two different perspectives on the same thing. And you can make two different decisions, as I've explained.
Stuart Sweetman was also asked about two clauses in the new contract for Horizon, which required ICL Fujitsu to keep and preserve data for post office criminal prosecutions.
There would have been paragraphs in that agreement that were written by lawyers. We had our own in-house lawyers, about 100 of them, I think, and they would have helped us draft agreements. We were using Slaughter and May as a renowned firm of solicitors to help us draft these things. And they would have inserted lots of, if I say, non-system paragraphs in there, because that's what lawyers do. They paper over all the potential cracks, and that's why you pay them. And if I saw that, I would have said, that's one of those paragraphs put in by a lawyer. But I don't remember it.
You think the clause where pathway is to provide evidence for use in prosecutions was put in by a lawyer rather than be a requirement of the post office itself?
I doubt if my project team would have dreamt that up themselves. It would have been, you need one of these in there, because I was aware that there was, and dealt with by the regional managers and retail network managers, there were isolated instances where we had legal problems with sub-postmasters. Unfortunately, very few of them did steal money in the past, and that was our history. And there had to be investigation and prosecutions and recovery of money. And that was before Horizon. And that I knew happened within the depths of the business.
And who was responsible for that?
And this is just continuing that process.
Who was responsible for the prosecutions within the post office?
I think our solicitors department had, under some legislation, the powers of prosecution, because the police and the prosecution authorities, if I say didn't want to be bothered with us, they were relieved when we had the in-house capacity to investigate crime, be it in the mail side or counters side, and to carry out the prosecutions. I think we had in-house solicitors who would have done that. But I knew broadly what they did, but I never got involved.
Now, one of the barristers to the inquiry, Sam Stevens, asked Sweetman if he was ever queried by the Post Office Board about the necessity to preserve evidence for postmaster prosecutions.
I would be amazingly surprised if they did.
Why would you be surprised?
Their eyes were on the far horizon, the little H, rather than down in the depths of my business. So that I very, very much doubt, because there weren't any lawyers on the main board, and they wouldn't have seen that clause. I wouldn't have brought it to their attention. So the board would not in any way have considered it.
It's a matter of where we know that there were prosecutions pursued in 2001, and so investigations in 2000 using Horizon data. So do you accept that Horizon was used to support prosecutions?
I had no knowledge of it. I think by then I was, again, one removed from the detail of running the business.
And is it right, I'm going to ask one last time, that you simply cannot tell us who in Post Office was thinking about how Horizon data could be used in prosecutions at this in 1999?
Again, I just reiterate what I've said. When you hand when you have the task of producing an agreement, you have all the people who are interested in what it delivers. Then you have the lawyers, and the lawyers insert paragraphs, and you have to trust their judgment. Well, normally you do.
So that was Stuart Sweetman. We also heard from Jonathan Evans, a former Post Office Network Director and Company Secretary, whose evidence showed in different ways how sub-postmasters weren't being listened to or were being ignored back in the late 1990s and early 2000s. There was no formal process for feedback on Horizon as it was being rolled out. The Post Office was relying on a convoluted chain of line managers to report that feedback, which for such a huge process of change seems perhaps naive. And Evans didn't seem to have any idea how the business decision to prosecute sub-postmasters on the basis of IT evidence was reached. Here he is being questioned by another counsel to the inquiry, Julian Blake, with an intervention from the inquiry's chair, Sir Wynne Williams.
Do you remember any discussions at board level in these early days? So from when you joined as company secretary, roll out an early, say, into 2001, anything about prosecuting sub-postmasters based on Horizon data?
What, that issue coming up at the board?
Yes.
I have no recollection of that at all.
You narrowed the question to just the board, which was my question, but outside of the board, were you aware of that?
Not connected with Horizon. You know, not obviously the, you know, the whole focus of this inquiry. I was not aware at all that sub-postmasters were being prosecuted on the strength of Horizon data wrongly until I read about it in the papers a few years ago.
Leave out the word wrongly, Mr. Evans. Were you aware that they were being prosecuted on the basis of data produced by Horizon?
No.
No?
No.
I'm sorry if I express surprise, but before 1999, inevitably, the accounting trail was a paper trail, and in most prosecutions of postmasters for fraud or theft, the paper trail would be important, I guess. So now we have Horizon. So I'm not quite sure how you wouldn't be aware of that.
Well, OK, I was no more aware of it than I would have been of the paper trail. You know, I would have been thinking that there's some, you know, if you like, business as usual activity going on, where it was not unusual for sub-postmasters to be prosecuted under the old system, and that would have been going on under the new system. But there was no mention that I can remember of prosecutions of sub-postmasters pre-Horizon or post-Horizon, actually. You know, it wasn't. If we talk about conversations at board level here.
I think actually Mr. Blake was asking about your personal knowledge rather than conversations at board level. But if he wasn't, I am.
Yeah, OK. Well, as I think I said earlier, when I was at, you know, lower levels in the organisation, I was very aware of prosecutions taking place. The higher up I went, you know, I don't think I was aware of individual prosecutions that were taking place.
So can I ask you the direct question? Did you personally consider whether prosecutions based upon a paper audit trail were likely to be different in the evidential trail compared with prosecutions based upon a computer system?
I don't think that thought, perhaps wrongly, but I don't think that thought crossed my mind.
That was Jonathan Evans, who also said the board had no knowledge of the 2009 Computer Weekly article.
Your 2009 Computer Weekly article.
of our 2009 Computer Weekly article about problems with Horizon, which is, again, quite difficult to understand because their director of comms was certainly aware of it. And I can't imagine that reporting chain is too long from him to the board. So given the seriousness of the nature of the allegations that were in that article, it seems very surprising that they wouldn't have been told. But no senior manager that I've seen so far giving evidence has been particularly introspective.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. And I actually thought Jonathan Evans was particularly unimpressive. However, we have saved who I personally thought was the best witness until last, Andrew Simpkins, a consultant brought in from Grant Thornton in 1998 to try and help the post office and Fujitsu, or ICL as it then was, begin to solve some of the problems they had whilst trying to get Horizon in good enough shape to roll out. Now, he, like Jeremy Fakes, was highly technical, and he seemed to be doing his damnedest to get a working IT system over the line, but without any idea what the post office might use it to do.
I never knew in my entire time on the project that there even was a post office investigations team, let alone that people could be prosecuted. I just did not know that existed. I mean, I'd never been in a business environment, you know, where in Lloyd's TSB or the Inland Revenue, where, you know, there's a discrepancy in accounting report and someone goes to prison for it. I mean, that was just beyond my conception. This is a bigger point, isn't it? This is a bigger point, because where within the programme at any point up till rollout was that risk identified? I never saw it in any documentation. I never heard it mentioned in a meeting. I don't think people, I know it sounds astonishing in retrospect, but I don't think people, I mean, certainly people like myself, not post office people, I think probably many people within the team did not understand, did not conceive that if you had these accounting discrepancies in the branches that the postmasters couldn't explain, they would be held liable.
Andrew Simpkins also said when he first arrived and looked at the Horizon system, the problems were not just code-based, they were structural.
I would say within the EPOS system, there was some basic misconceptions as to how it had to work as an accounting system.
Misconceptions by who?
Well, by the original requirements gathering process, the original systems analysis, the original systems design. You know, it's as though people didn't realise that when you had an accounting transaction, it had to generate a debit and a credit somewhere. You know, it wasn't just a matter of, oh, great, we processed the sale of a stamp. No, so when you process the sale of a stamp, what debit and credit transactions does that generate? And where are they generated in the system? And if people are not clear where those accounting processes are taking place and where that balancing activity is being done in the system, you've got a design flaw. You see what I mean? That's a kind of a design flaw. You're not clear on how the accounting flows are going to work through the system in order to ensure that everything balances at the end of the day. And that's what, you know, right back from that position in late 1998, where I was concerned about the accounting functionality within the system. It's not just because I thought, you know, there's a few lines of wrong programming code here. It's because I thought someone hasn't thought through a robust design how this is going to work in the future.
Andrew Simpkins there, who was also astounded by an internal ICL document, which has come up several times in the last couple of weeks, and we've actually mentioned it earlier in this podcast, a fear that the Horizon EPOS system was still so unstable or unsafe that it needed to be rewritten.
It was an internal pathway document issued in November 1999 where some of their technical people made a proposal that the EPOS code should be rewritten. Now, that is a huge recommendation to rewrite the core product. Now, that, As I saw the subsequent documentation, that recommendation was actually turned down by their senior management, who yes. thought that it would be more cost-effective to just keep maintaining it. But if the post office team knew in November 1999, you know, like the month you were about to commit to national rollout, that there were people in Pathway, technical people in Pathway, who were so concerned about the stability of this product that they were thinking of that it should be rewritten, that would have been a red flag. I mean, that would have been very worrying.
And Simpkins was really good on what happened after Horizon was rolled out, and he identified a fundamental business process flaw in the way it had been designed, with postmasters as end users.
The postmasters, when they had a deficit or a, you know, an unexplained discrepancy, they couldn't get anything out of the system to explain what was going wrong. Now, if you then have to follow this through, right? They come up with an unexplained discrepancy. They've got no idea how it has happened. They ring the help desk. They say, I've got this discrepancy. I need some help to resolve it. I'm sure I haven't done anything wrong, but I've got this discrepancy. So that the help desk make a note of this. You know, branch so-and-so, unexplained accounting discrepancy. They've got no additional information to explain that. So at some point in the next few days, this perhaps is reported into Fujitsu, to cut the story short. So Fujitsu is told, there's a branch that has got an unexplained cash account discrepancy. They have got no information from the postmaster as to what might have gone wrong and where. So where do the Fujitsu people start looking for it? In testing systems, a crucial ability is replication. You know when you found a fault because you can replicate it within the test environment. That's the way you know you're 90% forward in resolving a problem. But if you don't really know what happened, if you haven't got the evidence around the practical business activity that originally led to the fault, you don't know what fault you're trying to replicate. So this is a crucial factor in why I think the live service support to Horizon was poor and why problems didn't get fixed over a period of years.
And finally, this is what Andrew Simpkins had to say on the corporate idiocy displayed by the post office over the Horizon IT system.
It seems that very quickly in 2000, the post office senior management, from what I've read, the National Federation of Sub-Postmasters, the Post Office Investigations Department, all came to the conclusion that this system is now working perfectly. You know, we're the only major corporation in the world that has got a 100% perfect computer system. I know that's a bit strong to put it that way, but for people with any IT background, to think that the senior management of a major public corporation can believe that their system is perfect is just, I don't know what word to use, you know, if I just said naive.
That was Andrew Simpkins. An awful lot of evidence this week and another epic week coming to a close.
Yes, it's quite difficult sometimes, isn't it, trying to pull together 4 days' worth of evidence into a podcast. I think
it is.
I don't know. I at the moment, I must admit, I feel like we've bitten off more than we can chew, but it's hopefully it's providing some kind of service.
To someone,
yeah. I don't dare look at the listening figures. If you are listening to this podcast, thank you. We're very grateful. If
yes,
you want
well
to
done.
Support our work, you can go to postofficescandal.uk website, and there is a donate button, which is at postofficescandal.uk/donate. And whilst we are plugging things, if I may, just mention that on Thursday the 10th of November, I am doing a talk at the Kenton Theatre in Henley-on-Thames with former sub-postmaster Pam Stubbs. Have you met Pam before, Rebecca?
No, I haven't, no.
Right, Pam is just amazing. She was lead witness in the first trial of Bates v Post Office. She is, and was, superb. I mean, she basically put the post office's barrister right back in his seat during her evidence. And she
amazing.
Is a brilliant talker. No, she's a great woman, Pam. So if you want to come along and see me and Pam talk about the post office scandal, her experience was so dreadful, she gets a chapter to herself in my book. I'd very much recommend coming to Kenton Theatre, Henley-on-Thames, on Thursday the 10th of November. And also, there is an updated paperback edition of the book, which features a chapter featuring Pam Stubbs, The Great Post Office Scandal, coming out in a couple of weeks. You can pre-order that now from Bath Publishing, and I will put a link to that and the theatre production and Rebecca Thompson's seminal 2009 Computer Weekly article in the blurb to this podcast, as we've mentioned all those things over the course of the last, must be about half an hour by now.
It must be. We will be back next week with another podcast summing up the evidence.
Yes, thank you very much for listening to Investigating the Pod Post Office Scandal, nearly called it Podcast Scandal. Don't forget to like and subscribe and follow so you get each new episode as it drops.
Investigating the Post Office Scandal is produced and presented by Rebecca Thompson and Nick Wallace, with sage advice and support from Whistledown Productions.
We will be back next week.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.